Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to today's episode of Information Week Live. This is Information Week Live for the week of July 15th, 2016, and I am Kurt Franklin, Executive Editor at Information Week, and your host for this episode of Information Week Live. We're glad you can be here with us if you're here with us live, because you know that there's a live online conversation that happens alongside our audio, and we would love to have your voice in that live online conversation. If you're listening to us via streaming, we welcome that and look forward to having your voice in future conversations. Well, speaking of voices in the conversation, I have two superb voices with me here today, beginning with our colleague from sister publication, Dark Reading. We have Sarah Peters, Dark Reading Senior Editor. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you for having me, Kurt. It's always a pleasure.
We're also joined by Information Week's Editor at Large, Charlie Babcock. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Good to be with you again, Kurt.
Now, I know that both of you are big sports fans and very knowledgeable about the technology around sports. So, Charlie, before we went on the air, you were pointing me at a website called Huddle. That's H-U-D-L. Tell me what Huddle is all about.
Well, it's a young outfit that came out of the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. Three recent grads of the school knew how important Cornhusker football was, and they kind of wanted to provide an assist or knowledge of what goes on in the football huddle. They came up with HUDL.com, later incorporated as Agile Sports Technologies, Inc. I like the HUDL huddle myself. And they put out a video upload service based on Amazon Web Services. If you're a coach, if you're merely an athlete yourself or maybe a parent of one, you can upload video and it'll be analyzed for the sport that it represents, and some statistics will be drawn out for the player singled out, or illustrations of what the whole team is doing with that player included. And I think it's kind of the analysis that you get out of it that's the key service. But the fact that you can upload it, initially it's free. Of course, you start paying fees as soon as you get serious about it. But you get some feedback. You get the opportunity, if you're a coach, to mark up the video. You could draw circles and arrows illustrating a particular player and where he or she went during the play and how it resulted in a favorable outcome for the team. So this has caught on like wildfire, and 2014, the last year in which any kind of results were announced, they pulled in $30 million in revenue. So it's no longer just three college grads wondering what to do with themselves.
Well, that's an impressive amount of revenue, and I'm impressed with the fact that this is evidently not just a very interesting application, but an interesting market. I was looking, I remember I did an article some time ago about a product that the folks at TechSmith have. They call it Coach's Eye, that does something similar, and it seems like you have a lot of amateur athletes who want to take advantage of the same technology that the pros and the larger college athletic organizations are using. Sarah, I know that you cover a lot of athletics, especially basketball. How critical are apps like this at the professional level?
Oh, they're huge. And what's interesting is that they're also not all of them are all that accessible for everybody. So one of my questions that I wanted to ask Charlie is this a service that's something that you have to pay for by a subscription? Is it something that is for free and it's monetized just by sponsorship or what?
It is subscription-based. They keep the subscriptions low for things like Little League Baseball and clubs and the amateurs. You can get a few minutes of service for free. Like if you're a golfer, you could upload a video of your swing and get it analyzed.
Wow.
Ditto for baseball, ditto for tennis. Very quickly, you will find yourself, if you're kind of doing this repeatedly, solicited for a $99 package at the very entry level, $299 for a more serious package if you're, again, an amateur video, amateur sports team. And by the time you get to college, it's more like $3,000 a year with, you know, multiple players and multiple teams. And it just goes up from there. They don't even list prices for professional sports teams. I think they charge them handsomely.
Well, I mean, I think what's really cool about this, though, is that what we all have so much access to are our stats right now. And so coverage of sports has become so number crunchy and that's great. And to some degree, I mean, stats are certainly useful, but I think some of us have gotten to the point where they think that just looking at the numbers is some kind of replacement for actually watching games. So something that says, no, here is a way of really looking at plays and diagramming them and being able to have some technology in hand where you can do that too is a pretty cool technology to be able to have. And if that was the kind of thing that a user or a journalist would be able to do, you know, pull out your smartphone or the stylus on your Surface Pro and mark it up and embed that into a story and say, here's how the play ran, but here's how I would have run it, that could be a very, very valuable tool and would be worth it if you were a media organization. It could be worth it to invest in something like that. Companies that, you know, the teams invest huge amounts of money in any of those technologies that help them zoom in on certain plays and also on certain kinds of plays. So that in basketball, which is what I cover, there's a technology that I've seen called Synergy that everybody uses, where it's something like you want to see how the other team defends the pick and roll, and you can just zoom in on exactly all of the pick and roll plays that team has defended and just watch them. Watch all of them through the whole season or, you know, anything. There's so many different ways that you can break it down, and some teams hardly use them at all, and some teams use them a great deal, and you can slow them down, and you can speed them up, and rewind, and fast forward. You know, it's all of this stuff is getting very important. I think the price point will depend upon how much us regular folks get involved as well. I think it's pretty exciting, though.
You know, Sarah, it's interesting. While we've been talking, I've been over here poking around on the huddle.com website. And to me, one of the fascinating things about this is something that they call Huddle Assist, where you can upload game video and they will have a team break it down into all kinds of individually tagged statistics and get it back to you within 24 hours. Looking at the price,
wow.
And looking at the price on this, it's well within what I can imagine a decent high school athletic booster organization paying out, especially
wow.
if you're in one of the sports heavy areas like the Southeast or the Midwest for football or basketball, and those are the two sports that they offer initially. But it's, even on a one-off, it's only $49 for a game.
Huh.
And you get volume discounts if you want to commit to more games. This is an add-on to your regular subscription. But all of a sudden, this is the sort of thing where a high school coaching staff could submit a video after a game on Friday night. And by Sunday afternoon, they're looking at a complete statistical breakdown to go with their film for you know, figuring out who has done what in a game. And I think that level of analytics brought down out of the professional leagues is just amazing.
It's fascinating. Are they doing it? Do they have any rules there about whether you can only do that kind of scouting for your own team, or can you use that for advanced scouting on the guys you're going to play next week?
Oh, you can use it. You can use it for scouting purposes. There's not like restrictive rules like that. If you submit the video, they'll analyze it for whatever purpose you want to use it.
Interesting. That's pretty
cool
stuff.
If I were a basketball coach, I would want to take a look at Game 7 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
And illustrate how with a series hanging in the balance, the Golden State Warriors had a chance. It's like less than a minute and 53 seconds left. The Warriors stole the ball, went down the court, and what is normally a bread and butter play, Andre Iguodala went up to put it in for a two-point play. And he had escaped his defender. He had gotten around another Cleveland defender. He released the ball, and out of nowhere came LeBron James, who knocked it out of contention for making the basket. And the stats on that helped me appreciate what a great play that was. I'm not really an admirer of LeBron James, but I thought that was just an outstanding play that won the game. He had 2/10 of a second from the time Iguodala released the ball until it would strike the backboard. And if he was late, he'd be called for goaltending and would have scored the point anyway. And he still somehow executed that play, even though it wasn't his responsibility. And I would take that, highlight it, and show it to my team and say, any one of you can execute a play like this if you try to be in the right place at the right time.
You know, Charlie, it's interesting you're talking about showing it to a team and talking about individual efforts, because one of the things that they mention in the Huddle Assist package is that they can do quality highlights to help your athletes be recruited. And that's the sort of thing where if you have a young athlete who is of a quality that they think they can be recruited, say, by one of the big-name college programs, it would well be worth it to see their highlights brought out and tagged by independent experts, you could say. To put together the sort of promotional reel that is commonplace in today's big-time amateur athletics.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It's really fascinating looking at this. And I think, Charlie, your timing on bringing this technology to us is just perfect because, as it turns out, today is the day that I got my Olympics preview issue of Sports Illustrated. And I think that we're going to be treated to a lot of analytics around the various sporting events for the roughly 3 weeks that the entire Olympics process takes place. I have to admit that's something that I enjoyed during the Olympic trials phase. It seemed that NBC, who is the U.S. broadcaster for the Olympics, was making use of a lot of these analytical tools in their coverage. And I'm a big enough geek that I find it fascinating. I will actually watch sports that I'm normally not interested in if they provide good enough analytics to show me what's actually happening.
Yeah, very good point.
Well, lest people think that Information Week has become a subsidiary of ESPN, we should probably move on a little bit. And although I do want to stay with sports for one more story, and Sarah, this is one that you and I were talking about before the show. A sentence was handed down in a case of cheating in U.S. professional sports. Tell me about this miscreant who is getting his comeuppance, courtesy of the court.
Well, his name is Christopher Correa, and he is the former scouting director of the St. Louis Cardinals. This all came out, I guess it was probably last year, but the sentence finally came down that he's been sentenced to almost 4 years for unlawful access to the database of the Houston Astros. Now, the FBI added up the damage to the Astros to be $1.7 million, which really doesn't, if you're a Major League Baseball team, $1.7 million isn't really all that much. But, I mean, what the guy was able to do was obtain access to the network, to the Astros' internal network that they use to scout all of their to scout players and to look at their own players, the thing that they use to discuss trades, to evaluate their players, to talk about injuries, all of that stuff. And this guy was able to access it because he had the password of an ex-Cardinals employee who left to join the Astros. So that guy had the same password, and that's how he was able to access this Astros entire network. And over the course of between 2013 and 2014, he was able to get all of this information and use that for the benefit of the Cardinals. And so almost 4 years, 46 months officially in prison, and a fine of $279,000 for hacking on behalf of the Cardinals without their knowledge, but they benefited from it at a time when that franchise did quite well.
Well, this is interesting that there was, you know, a fairly substantial prison sentence handed down.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider the prison sentences handed down for things like, oh, I don't know, crashing the U.S. economy in 2008. Why do you think that the judge was so harsh in this case? Was there any sort of justification given, or do you think that in general we're seeing the entire law enforcement and justice apparatus trying to take cyber issues more seriously?
I think it's the latter. I think that they're just trying to take cyber issues more seriously. And this was really, I guess when this first came out, the news of this really just broke June of last year. When this news hit, everybody started saying that this was a real wake-up call on industrial cyber espionage. At the time, people really weren't thinking that industrial espionage was happening in this way. You still say cyber espionage, and there's still people who dismiss it as a thing that even happens across international borders for international, like, government intelligence purposes. But so the idea of somebody stealing intellectual property, a lot of companies still think, well, that doesn't really happen. And a lot of sports organizations that I've spoken to, they're like, well, we don't have anything that anybody would steal, because they think that hackers are only interested in, first of all, they think it's only hackers. And they think that hackers are only people who want government secrets, or they're people who only want personal, you know, data that they can go sell on the dark net somewhere. They don't really think that they have anything that anybody wants. So when this happened last year, it was like, oh wait, everybody has something valuable. Everybody has something worth buying and worth selling. And I think that this was the first kind of high profile case that made people aware of it. I think that this is only the first time that we're going to, I think there will be more cases like this. I do think it's a big sentence for what it is. 4 years in prison for basically snooping on somebody else's network. I don't know. For me, it's not like they were stealing government secrets. And meanwhile, this week there also was a Russian agent who was sentenced to 10 years for sending microcontrollers back to Russia. So that's 10 years. This is 4 years. I would think that there would be a little. I feel like just getting twice half the sentence for getting some information about baseball players, when you're comparing that to a guy who sold military equipment to the Russians. I don't know. I think that there's a little bit of strange sentencing going on, I do. But my point is simply that I think there will be more industrial cyber espionage sentences going out, and that this one might be big just because it was really the first big one that we know of. It's a long-winded answer to your simple question.
But very thorough, and that's a good thing, because it actually lets me segue, Charlie, over to you, because I know you spend a lot of time covering some infrastructure issues, things like Docker and containers, and security is one of the things that we've heard companies use as an excuse not to go with various cloud-type services. To what extent is security being taken seriously around Docker and around containers? Is it one of those things that's really baked in, or are there companies and organizations adding security onto these technologies?
It's coming closer to being baked in, Kurt. Initially, containers were a loosely assembled set of software components put in a package that could be moved around. If somebody were able to spoof a Linux distributor and you got your Linux from that site, then your container was contaminated. And not only that, you were moving it around the company where whatever intrusion might be contained in it would be spread around as well. Now, as they build containers and pull in their components, they double check the source. They have encrypted signatures that confirm it came from where it said it came from, and a spot check that it has not been tampered with en route. They do a much better job of building containers and keeping out potential malware. Still maybe not foolproof if you have a huge mix of different parties on a single server all using containers, because we're still just a little up in the air as to what might happen in a shared memory space that all the containers occupy. Virtual machines tend to have harder boundaries around them than containers. So the cloud vendors still make use of virtual machines even when you send them a container to run your workload. But the security is much better. Everybody's paying attention to it. Both CoreOS and Docker have made great strides locking down containers.
Well, it's nice to hear that there is an area of computing where positive strides are being made when it comes to security. It would be very easy to get the impression that the bad guys are winning at every turn. It's nice to know that that's not necessarily true. And we're coming down to the end of the show, so I want to give each of you, we've had a great conversation today about sports and security, but I'd like to find out, and I'll start with you, Charlie, in just a minute or two, is there a story this week that we haven't talked about that you think is worth bringing to the attention of our listeners?
Well, I think the Open Data Center Alliance has done some good work for enterprises as they contemplate moving legacy systems to the cloud. I need to get in there and report on that work. It has to do with the cloud maturity model and how it will help you assess where you are in terms of getting a workload to the cloud. So coming up, we hope to explain that and possibly explain how you use it.
Very good. We will certainly be looking forward to that. Always great stuff coming from your keyboard, and we appreciate it. Now, Sarah, I want to turn to you real quickly. Is there a story this week that you wanted to be able to talk about that we just haven't had a chance to get to?
I wanted to be able to talk a little bit about some new proposed changes to the WAFNR arrangement that have been written up by some people at Microsoft and some other people, and I just haven't had a chance to do it. The WAFNR arrangement being a regulation about the export of basically a rule about kind of that a lot of people in the security industry are worried about, because it changes what kind of security and technology that they'll be able to export. It puts a lot of strain on them and what kind of researchers they can work with. And there's been a lot of good smart people trying to prevent the laws that was originally written going through, and I want to take another look at what proposed changes that they have written, but I didn't get a chance to do it this week. I'm going to hopefully get to it next week.
Well, it's nice to know we have something to look forward to from you as well. That's always good news, and we always do look forward to the articles you write, most of which serve to scare the living bejabbers out of everyone who reads them. But, that's useful as well. Well, each of you has talked about what's coming up. I've got to say, I've got an interesting piece that I've written and is going to be, I think, being published this weekend. It's on how becoming a better Pokemon Go trainer will help you become a better Scrum Master in Agile development. And the undeniable links between Pokemon Go and Scrums is, something that you'll just have to read about in my article, which, as I said, should be up on informationweek.com this weekend.
You're the only one reporting on that, Kurt.
Well, so far, it's a narrow niche, and I plan to cover it like the dew, to quote the tagline from a great Southern newspaper of years gone by. Well, quickly, Sarah, thank you for being with us. Let us know how we can follow you on social media.
You can find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters, no H in Sarah.
And Charlie, how about you? Where do you hang out on the Tweety Pipes and other social media?
At Babcock CW on Twitter. That's my main outlet.
As for me, you can follow me on Twitter at KG4GWA. And I hope that you will follow all of us, because each of us has a different take on the news, but each one, I think, has something well worth reading on a regular basis. Well, for my guests, Sarah Peters, senior editor at Dark Reading, and Charlie Babcock, editor at large at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next week.